accession number 27074, reel 12.
Squadron leader Cyril Bamberger, reel 12. You've just described for me, squadron leader, some of the aspects of aerial combat over Malta. Are there any specific incidents that you can remember flying against German aircraft at all?
I don't want to sound negative, but most of the occasions that I was, I call it in combat over Malta, was keeping out of the way of 109s and trying to find something more vulnerable, such as Stuka or Ju 88 or whatever odd, maybe odd Italian aircraft. But if you use the word combat, thinking of fighter combat, I think I probably spent most of my time in fighter combat, and that's with 109s, very briefly. In other words, we're talking about seconds. I either trying to get a brief shot or briefly getting out being shot at. There was nothing that dragged on for any period of time that would I could tell a dramatic story about. Possibly it would give you a little bit of an idea. I'll tell you one little anecdote. Sometime sometime during probably March, April, it was decided we'd try and intercept during moonlight periods the mostly at that time Italian bombers coming over at night, what I call nuisance raiders. And there'd be two pilots selected for this particular task. And I remember the first patrols were done by McLaughlin and someone called Chubby Elliott. They were very close friends, both officers. And then I was on the next stint with someone else. I can't remember who I was on with. And we'd be around our aircraft or sitting on our aircraft about 11 at night or something like that when ground control was tell us they thought there was a plot coming in and we'd be scrambled. Now, to take off, we had what you call gooseneck flares, which I may have mentioned to you before in training. And if anyone listens to this, they'll have to look up what gooseneck are. And these were lit, and I took off. Remember, it was moonlight, so it was quite enjoyable almost, taking off in the moonlight night. And we were ordered to orbit a little island off Malta called Filfla, which is just off the south west corner of Malta, at a particular height. It was probably about 20,000 feet, I should think, but I can't remember. And wait to be called in by ground control. Now, the first indication you got, you saw the searchlights. weaving around the sky. And you immediately started, sort of without any instructions, moving. You thought, well, if they're going to get on something, you want to be there. And getting down to the height that they were sort of seeking. Anyway, this sort of thing happened, and you saw AK-AK guns firing, and you waited and tried to pick up an aircraft in the searchlights or something like that. But then quite frequently the searchlights would come onto you, which was not what you wanted, so then you'd go away because you were confused in the situation, and then come in again. But obviously during this time you'd be keeping an eye on your fuel. And remember, though it was a moonlight night, it was night. And anyway, the searchlights went out and the AK-AK fire stopped. And you looked at your fuel and said, I've only got about 15 minutes left, or worse, than something like that. So go to ground control. Will you ask them to put on the flares? I'll come into land now. Ground control came back. Sorry, cannot put on the gooseneck flares. We still have not yet got the all clear. I don't know. 4 minutes later, ground control, could you put on the gooseneck flares? Fine. Ground come back. Sorry. Oh, I don't know whether they said sorry. No, we still haven't got the all clear. So there was someone sitting in a hole about 500 feet down in Valletta, talking about someone giving an all clear. And they were up in the dark over Malta, your fuel ran. So, cut long short, they had out there what they called a chance light. That was a big floodlight, anyway, and it had a red light on the top. That's how you wouldn't fly into it. And they put the red light on, or the chance light, and wouldn't like, and so I landed just by moonlight. And that's why I say that even by then they hadn't come into the war. So I just landed by moonlight. But that's how, things were at that time. But that's just one instance of, coming up against the enemy or not coming against the enemy.
So that time you were operating both day operations and night fighter operations?
The night flights are only occasionally and only in a good moonlight, but not frequently.
And the system of ground control, was that the one that you'd been used to during the Battle of Britain period, or was it different over Malta?
I think you won't remember, of course, Malta's only a little isle, and there's a lot of... So, if they said there was a plot or something over the island, and you knew where they were coming from, you hadn't got to say. So, it was a matter of waiting for them to arrive, or climb, mostly you were climbing up, waiting for them to arrive. Or you may not have even climbed up, you may not have taken off, waiting for them to arrive. But the ground control was very sort of general, for understandably so, so at that point in time. Now, the other thing was they had a sort of radar, but it wasn't the ship's radar. When the ships were in, you got better information than you got when the ships were not in. But I think the main thing was lack of experience. And I'll go into that a little later, because it's just as I leave the island, I'll tell you about that. I don't think... Well, if there'd been anybody in headquarters and ground control There was some called Burgess, but that's another story, who really had a firm grasp of what was going on. Not from my lowly position, remember. Now, I will say this, and of course this happened to me as an officer and as a sergeant, so I could see both sides of it. When you're with a group of officers, the people who are doing the controlling, you meet. And any, say, happenings during the day may have been discussed in the mess, or what may have happened there. As a sergeant pilot, and I'm talking about 1940, 1941, you got very little information of the general picture, if any at all. And I must say, I'll go back now to going to when I was commissioned. And I should have been more responsible, I suppose. You did discuss things in the mess. You did get it. The wing commander would be there, or the group captain would be there, and you'd talk about this, you'd talk about the other. But the sergeant pilots were in a separate. So, you know, so it's. I mean, this is all with hindsight. I'm sure it's been written about somewhere. I mean, all pilots on the Battle of Britain, in fact, right through the war, fighter pilots, I'm talking about bomber pilots, because that's a different sort of setup, should have all messed together, eaten together, and lived together. So I'm not quite where I've got to now.
It was just about the ground control, the facilities for ground control you were discussing.
Well, so, whereas some of the officers, or some of the officers, or senior officers, may have known a little bit more what was going on, certainly the information hadn't filtered down to ground control, and they didn't seem to have much of a grasp of what to do. Obviously, it was suddenly a bright idea. Let's fly south of the island for 20 miles to gain height and then come back in. Well, on the few occasions we did that, apart from using up fuel, nothing came in. And if it had done, we'd have probably been too far away, too late to do anything about it. So really, we had to wait till the scramble came and take our chances.
How often would the Germans come, say, in a day?
Well, see, all I ever put in my lug was patrol. Now then, on the 18th of January, I went 1, 2, 3. I flew 3 times. No, 4 times. On the 19th, I flew 3 times. Then there were more single trips there. On February 1st, I flew twice. There must have been a quiet period then. Oh, it was on the 10th of February that I flew a patrol at night.
So you've been looking at me.
I should say, when I was flying and on standby, for instance, on the 5th there, I flew 4 times. One of them was a search, so it was 4, and then a search for someone who had been lost. I'd say I probably average 2 and 3 scrambles a day. And the thing to remember with them, as compared with operational flying elsewhere, though some of the flights were longer for whatever reason, I can't say. I just go down this page. There was one flight here, 1 hour 30. Now, what I was doing then, I haven't got the slightest idea. I can tell you a possibility, but then 30 minutes, 25 minutes, 40 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 35 minutes, 35, 40 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, 20 minutes, 1 hour 20, 30 minutes, 45 minutes. So compared with operational flying anywhere else, it was somewhat sort of, you know, stress. because you were operating as soon as you got off, sort of thing.
What did you think the longer flights may be?
What? Well, I'll just give you... I was up with McLaughlin one day. He records it in his book. And there was obviously only the two of us up. There wasn't anybody else up. And we chased one plot. These are the Lone Rangers sort of thing, nuisance raids coming in. When we were given another plot, which was north of the island, and we went obviously looking, and we found, I think they called it a Kant seaplane with red crosses on it. And down we went, and Bleem McLaughlin and his, he didn't like the Germans. He shut it up, and that was it. And that was the end of any German pilots who were on board being picked up out of the sea. So that could have taken been an R-20, something like that. And those sort of things did occur. People were lost, and you went looking for them.
Were you successful in doing that, or was that very difficult to
do? No, that was... The sad part of that was, on one specific occasion, and I remember his name, because at the time, his father was a group captain in England. Oh, gosh, I remember his name. And we found him, and he was, let's say, 50 miles north of Malta. We found him and orbited him. He was alive. But there was nobody would, or the Navy wouldn't, go and pick him up. So these things happen quite frequently, these sort of anomalies. You don't know quite what was fact or fiction.
I was wondering at that time, was there any facilities for air sea rescue?
Well, that's what I was getting at, you see. There were probably boats there that could have done air sea rescue. But they didn't want to expose them for that particular thing. So it's better to lose a pilot than a boat go out and get strafed and shot and lost a boat. Someone had to make these decisions, obviously.
So you mentioned the sort of length of operations you would do, or patrols that you would do over Malta. Are there any specific difficulties over operating over such a small island?
The only one, which I probably already stressed three or four times, that you didn't have time to get height. And we did try flying away from the island to get height, but then, of course, if something comes in, you're not there to give it the defensive cover. So normally, we climbed over the island and just hoped you'd be around. We may fly a little south, but very rarely. But there wasn't, except amongst, say, individual pilots, and I mentioned McLaughlin again, because he was the only officer of what I call with any para status that I really admired out there. There was no one to... I mean, you know, for instance, it may have been a good idea, but it would have meant the island had been bombed, but to give them a flight, to fly north and get them when they were coming out. But, of course, General Dobie wouldn't have agreed with that. But it would have given them... But there wasn't that sort of thinking around, you see.
Did tactics develop amongst yourselves then? Because obviously it was a very different situation from the Battle of Britain.
Yeah.
And very different from anything else that was being experienced in any other combat zone at the time.
There was no other theatre, I don't think, quite like Malta for fighter pilot operations. And so I think that is why the people that were there when I first went out there said, oh, you don't know anything about opera. And in some way that it was the truth, because it was a different... But there was also the element, as I mentioned, of the Italians' approach to air warfare at that time. I don't think I can say anything more about Operation Malta, except that it was difficult to be offensive, difficult to be aggressive. This is your my stay there I'm talking about now, not before or afterwards. It was just I will go on to now. I moved from 261 squadron to 185 squadron, and 185 squadron had been flown out by pilots. They were Hurricane 2s. And better performance, and so on and so forth. And it was decided that the new pilots had come out, they're all experienced, Boy Merle, Pat Hancock, also. And Boy Merle, one squadron, was going to be CO, or was CO, killed out there, unfortunately. And there was going to be, I think, four of us. I had no choice in the matter. I suddenly found myself sent to 185 at Halfar, form squadron 185. In some book I read, Chubby Elliott, who was one of the officers, he was asked if he'd volunteer to go. No one asked me to volunteer. And so there we were, a new squadron with, have I told you this before? New squadron. Couldn't tell you how many aircraft we probably had. I should imagine probably about somewhere between 12 and 16 of these Hurricane 2s. A brand new outfit. And the Germans were still there, and the war continued. Normally, I think we took 6 aircraft off at this early stages. I've got a list hidden somewhere. Interesting thing, because things were just changing a little bit, because a sergeant I was leading, not the whole thing, but I was leading another sergeant, which was almost a simple thing to do at that time. And I think it is on May the 1st, a new squadron was formed at Halfar, and we had Hurricane 2s, somewhat more powerful engine than the Mark 1. And we continued the usual struggle, trying to come to terms and match the 109s and the bombers they were bringing over the island, to match them and to deter them.
Could I ask you about Boy Mould?
Yeah.
What your impressions of him were?
Boy Mould was a breath of life to me. Chubby Elliott, who had been with 261, was also good, but Boy Mould was a breath of life. I mean, since McLaughlin left, I had a wonderful respect for him and his ability.
Because I believe Boy Mould had been, he'd come up through the ranks as well, had he?
I'm not quite certain of his background. All I remember, I knew he was with one squadron in France.
How was he a breath of fresh air?
Well, Well, he taught the same language, and he spoke to you. I say, no, you're CO, and you speak to a CO. As an equal, you could air an opinion. Must have been that one. On or about the 22nd of May, I took off in the last serviceable hurricane of. I took off with a Sergeant Wynne. In the last two serviceable hurricanes of 185 Squadron, we were ordered to give top cover to 261 Squadron, which was still existent, hadn't left there, hadn't been disbanded, to give top cover to them. Sergeant Wynne and I were bounced by, because we were on top of covering 261, we were bounced by a considerable number of 109s, and unfortunately Sergeant Wynne was shot down and killed. I landed my Hurricane at Halfar, and as it happened, the station commander was there, and I actually said to him, I'm not flying from this bloody island again.
Was that related to the loss of Sergeant Wynne?
Well, there I was. We'd formed a new squadron about 2 weeks ago with high hopes. And there I landing the last service one at that particular time. And the person I'd taken off had been shot down. So it, obviously I was expressing my frustration or depression or whatever one you call it, of my feelings at that time. Fortunately, and this is what you mentioned about ground control and operational control, by coincidence, Wing Commander O'Hallahan, who'd been CO of one squadron in France, had been posted to Malta as head controller. Now then, someone, because remember, I was only a sergeant, must have thought something of me, because I found myself down at headquarters for the first and only time, talking to Wing Commander O'Hallahan, and discussing tactics in Malta and operational tactics in Malta. He said to me, well, look, I've got some aircrafts. I want ground testing. There was an airfield called Safi. It's just a strip. Would you test these for me and see what they're like? Which I did. And something on the 12th of June, he rang me in the sergeant's mess and said, would you like to go home? He said, we've got there's Sunderland, which you can get a seat in, going flying out tonight from Califrana. And cut on board, about 3 hours later, I was on board at Sunderland flying home. Now, the interesting thing about this, to me anyway, probably to nobody else, was that even if General Dobie had left Malta, the Governor General, he'd have had to have gone to Egypt. Everyone went back. I got flown home. though there's no record anywhere, no, that was better than getting, to me, it was better than getting any medals at all. I got home.